Good evening, and welcome to Midnight Signals. I'm your host, Russ Chamberlain. And tonight, we return to a story that many of you had heard whispers about. A tale that is modern in its time frame, yet old in the primal, unsettling sense it evokes. It's a reminder that shadows can lurk just beyond the carefully trimmed hedges of our suburban dreams. The place at the center of the story is an otherwise ordinary house in a peaceful neighborhood, 657 Boulevard, in Westfield, New Jersey. But despite its serene appearance, this home became the stage for a chilling mystery orchestrated by an unknown figure who referred to themselves as the Watcher. Settle in, friends, draw the curtains, let the hush of the night envelop you, and open your mind to the quiet tensions that can live beneath suburban comforts. Tonight's narrative will unfold in the details, the stray moments and half-glimpsed revelations that bring us ever closer to a truth we may never fully grasp. This is the story of 657 Boulevard, a house with a polished exterior, nestled in a neighborhood renowned for its charm, yet haunted by an unseen observer whose letters bore unsettling words and ominous intent. It began the way so many suburban stories do. A family found their dream home. They were drawn to Westfield by the promise of quiet streets, top-rated schools, and a tight-knit community. The house itself, 657 Boulevard, stood with a dignified grace, exuding classic charm, a broad, welcoming porch, elegant architectural flourishes, and tall windows that let in copious sunlight. It was a place where you could imagine years of family memories being made, children racing through corridors, holiday decorations lighting up the front lawn, neighbors dropping by with homemade pies. When the new owners, let's call them the Bradfords for the sake of our narrative, first stepped onto the property, they felt that spark of excitement that comes with a new beginning. They scrimped, saved, and planned meticulously to secure the home. As they toured it, every room seemed to beckon with future plans. They saw a nursery, a reading alcove, a study, a guest room, each corner brimming with possibilities. The older woodwork lent an air of history and permanence, something the Bradfords found especially appealing. Little did they know that this history also held secrets and perhaps an obsessive guardian who believed 657 Boulevard was more than just a house. It was a legacy, a prize that needed to be monitored, guarded, and if you believe certain lines in the letters, controlled. In the first few weeks, life was a flurry of activity. Renovating work got underway, updating certain fixtures, painting walls, bringing modern convenience to a classic home. Contractors came and went with trucks and tools, moving boxes stacked up in the foyer. The kids played in the backyard, chasing each other around an old oak tree as their parents envisioned the future. It was chaotic, but it was a sort of chaos that signals a fresh chapter in life, steeped in optimism. But an undercurrent of unease was about to ripple through this idyllic picture, and it all started when the first letter arrived. It came in an unremarkable envelope, dropped into the mailbox one early afternoon. At first glance, it might have passed as a piece of junk mail or a welcome card from the neighborhood. The envelope had no return address and was sealed with neat precision. Upon opening it, the Bradfords found a typed letter, the words arranged in short, deliberate sentences. The letter was addressed not simply to them, but to the new owners of 657 Boulevard. In it, the writer spoke directly to the family, almost as though they'd been waiting for them to arrive. There were no explicit threats in that first note, or a tone of curiosity and entitlement. The writer called themselves the Watcher and claimed to have been observing the house for some time, waiting for its next inhabitants. They described 657 Boulevard as a living entity with a storied past, suggesting the family's arrival was a part of a larger plan. Perhaps more chillingly, they asked, "Have you found what lies in the walls yet?" At first, the Bradfords dismissed the letter as a bizarre but harmless prank. They reasoned that in any community, there might be an eccentric figure who fixates on a local landmark. Besides, they had so much on their plate, renovations, unpacking, and registering the kids for school. They filed the letter away, but couldn't quite shrug off the tingling discomfort it caused. When the second letter came, however, discomfort turned to fear. By the time the next envelope arrived just a few days later, the family had settled into a partial routine. The father, Mark, worked from a makeshift office in the dining room. His wife, Evelyn, was busy coordinating painting schedules and repairs. They still weren't fully sleeping there every night. With the commotion of renovation, sometimes they stayed at Evelyn's parents' home in a neighboring town. But they were making progress, bit by bit. That second letter was more pointed than the first. "The house is crying out for the young blood you've brought," it read, echoing a tone that was both archaic and predatory. "I asked the previous owner to fill the house with children. They obeyed, and now it's your turn." Strangely, it included small details about the family's movements, a reference to how Evelyn had parked her car in the driveway the previous morning, and a mention of the times the kids came out to play in the backyard. It seemed that the watcher wasn't content merely to note their arrival. They were tracking their day-to-day life. The letter ended with a warning. "It's my turn to watch 657 Boulevard. I've waited years for this. Do not disappoint me." It was signed simply again by the watcher. Alarmed, the Bradfords reached out to local police. Two officers arrived, looked over the letters, and took statements. They advised the family to keep an eye out for anyone suspicious, to possibly consider installing security cameras. With that, the official response concluded. There was no immediate suspect and no direct threat to press charges upon. Suburban Westfield wasn't accustomed to these kinds of issues, and the police didn't have much to go on. Nonetheless, a seed of anxiety was planted in the Bradfords' minds. They wondered if a neighbor was behind this. They started noticing small movements on the street, curtains fluttering, cars idling, each moment rich with paranoia. They put up security cameras, installed motion sensor floodlights, and checked the mail with bated breath. And still, the letters kept coming. Each new letter echoed the same disturbing theme. The watcher considered 657 Boulevard to be more than bricks and mortar. It was an heirloom, a vessel of some intangible essence that needed caretakers and watchers. The watcher claimed their family had watched the house for generations, referencing a father and grandfather who supposedly did the same before them. "In these halls, children laughed and new families arrived," one letter said. "You are but the latest in a long story. Do not try to rewrite its ending." As the Bradfords read these words, they couldn't help feeling violated. Their dream home was meant to be a sanctuary, a place to make warm memories. Instead, they were coping with the dread of an unseen observer. The question was always the same: who could be watching us so closely? Some neighbors in Westfield rolled their eyes at the rumors. "It's probably a prank," they said, "or maybe an attempt at blackmail." Others reacted with caution, sensing something ominous. If the watcher truly lived nearby, it meant anyone on the block could be behind this. Maybe it was the kindly older woman who tended her roses each morning, or the middle-aged fellow in the white car who nodded politely as he drove by. The specter of suspicion crept into every polite interaction, turning the community's hallmark friendliness into potential cover for a sinister secret. In time, the story leaked out of Bradford's immediate circle and into the press. Journalists caught wind of letters from the watcher and pounced on the sensational details. The references to young blood, the invasions of privacy, the multi-million dollar property now at the center of a real-life ghost story. Headline-hungry outlets published features asking, "Who is the watcher of 657 Boulevard?" Some suggested it was a local tradition that got out of hand. Others speculated it might be a mentally unstable individual. Rumors flew faster than facts, each rumor feeding the house's ever-darkening reputation. To understand Westfield's surprise at the letters, you have to realize it's a place that prides itself on its history and community spirit. Situated within commuting distance of Manhattan, it's a picturesque town with shops, cafes, and neatly landscaped parks. The trees are lined with stately older homes, some dating back to the early 20th century, carefully preserved and lovingly maintained. 657 Boulevard wasn't just another house. It was a cornerstone of the street, often admired for its architecture. Over the years, families had come and gone without incident. Sure, there might have been the usual neighborly disputes over property lines or noisy parties, but no one could recall anything as bizarre as an anonymous letter writer claiming guardianship over a house. So when word spread about the watcher, it echoed with a note of the surreal. This kind of thing wasn't supposed to happen here. Some longtime residents whispered that Westfield once had its share of oddities, like any town with a lengthy past. One older neighbor recalled childhood stories of an eccentric man who wandered the streets at night, peering into windows, claiming that the houses spoke to him. But those were half-forgotten tales from the 1960s and 70s, drifting at the edge of memory. The Watcher's references to a father and grandfather who watched the house suggested a multi-generational secret, but no one had concrete evidence of a lineage of Watchers. As curiosity mounted, amateur sleuths and neighbors scoured old records, hoping to find mention of a family associated with 657 Boulevard. If there had been Watchers in the 1920s or 1960s, perhaps a name would emerge. Yet the public archives revealed nothing definitive, no single family line that stuck to the property or hovered around it like a curse. Without any tangible leads, speculation lurked in half-lit corners. In the months that followed, the Bradfords met repeatedly with the police. They also hired a private investigator, someone who specialized in background checks and discreet surveillance. Together, they tried to piece together patterns. Times letters arrived, any unusual visitors to the block, even local mail carriers' routes. Was it possible the letters were being dropped in the mailbox by hand? Or was someone mailing them from a post office in a neighboring town? One small break came when they noticed that some letters were postmarked from a sorting facility relatively close by, while others were postmarked elsewhere. It suggested either the Watcher traveled for work or had others mail the letters on their behalf. But again, there was no single suspect, no face on which to pin the blame. The investigators interviewed neighbors under the guise of casual conversation, gleaning small bits of intel. Who worked long hours? Who traveled often? Who strolled by the house at odd times? Yet each tip ended in a dead end. No one seemed to be a perfect fit. Meanwhile, the letters grew more threatening. 657 Boulevard will not be so kind if you continue to ignore its needs, read one. Your children are lovely. I look forward to knowing their names. Perhaps the house will whisper them to me. That mention of the children, so direct and unsettling, was a gut punch to the Bradfords. Evelyn found herself awake at night, replaying the lines in her mind, imagining all the worst-case scenarios. She began refusing to let the kids play outside unless she or Mark stood watch. The children themselves sensed something was wrong. They saw their parents flinch at every ring of the doorbell, every shadow on the lawn. A few nights later, Evelyn thought she heard footsteps on the front porch after midnight. She woke Mark, but by the time he looked out the window, no one was there, or so he said, trying to reassure her. Still, the security footage only showed a faint outline of a stray cat. Whether it was just Evelyn's nerves or something else, it heightened the sense that they were under siege by an invisible presence that might appear at any moment. Despite their best efforts, the family felt they were losing a battle against a phantom. The letters full of cryptic demands never ceased. Some weeks they arrived twice in close succession. Other times, a month or two would pass in silence before the next chilling message dropped into the mailbox. Each letter chipped away at the family's resolve, making them question whether they could ever truly call 657 Boulevard home. As gossip swelled, Westfield found itself at the center of unwanted attention. Reporters from larger outlets staked out the block, hoping to snap photos or gather quotes from neighbors. People who'd lived on the streets for decades insisted they had no idea who could be responsible. More than one whispered that it might be someone with a personal grudge against the Bradfords, but that didn't make any sense. Why fixate on the house so obsessively, referencing its past owners and architectural changes? Others speculated that the Bradfords themselves were behind it, a kind of hoax or strategy to renege on the purchase. Some neighbors pointed out that the cost of renovations had ballooned and maybe the family wanted out from an expensive mortgage. But when local law enforcement arrived to review these theories, they found no evidence the Bradfords had anything to gain. Their financial documents were in order, and no one invents a twisted stalker just to sabotage their own dream home. At least, not without leaving more obvious clues. Tensions mounted, not only for the Bradfords, but for everyone on the street. Imagine living one house over, or across the road, never knowing if the person next door suspects you of writing the letters. After all, the Watcher was presumably local, a keen observer of daily routines. Friendly ways became stiff and formal. cookouts and block parties fizzled. Trust eroded as the months crept on. One neighbor, a middle-aged woman who had lived there for over 20 years, recalled seeing a peculiar figure passing by 657 Boulevard around 11 p.m. multiple times. She mentioned this to the police, just a shape in the darkness, often wearing a hooded jacket. Was it the same person each time? She couldn't say. She only knew it wasn't someone she recognized. This lead also went nowhere. The only real conclusion was that someone walked at night in that part of the town. Hardly a crime, and nothing that directly tied back to the letters. Few outside the family truly grasped the psychological toll the ongoing harassment exacted. For Mark and Evelyn Bradford, the dream had soured into a fog of anxiety. They'd sunk their savings into the down payment, uprooted their children from another community, and pinned their hopes on this grand historic property. Now, they felt more like intruders than owners. Every corner, every creak in the floorboard seemed to hold the question, is this house rejecting us? Or is someone using the house's reputation to push us out? Their children, too young to fully comprehend the situation, sensed the dread. They overheard snippets of conversations about the scary letters or someone's watching us. They had nightmares about lurking strangers. Family dinners became subdued, overshadowed by talk of legal options, security improvements, or the possibility of moving again, something they could hardly afford so soon. Mark took to pacing the upstairs hallway at night, peering out the second floor windows, scanning the street below for any signs of an observer. The security cameras sometimes captured flickers, a passing car's headlights, a raccoon darting by, but never a clear figure scribbling notes or dropping letters in the mailbox. Evelyn developed a habit of double-checking every lock in the house before bed, then checking them again after midnight if she happened to wake up. In a desperate attempt to find peace, they considered never actually moving in full-time. The renovation stalled to a slow crawl, overshadowed by the question, what's the point if we're not safe here? They spent nights at Evelyn's parents' house more often than not, almost treating 657 Boulevard as a cursed property they only visited in daylight hours. But the mortgage was real. The bills had to be paid, and the house's presence loomed over them. Walking away entirely would be a financial disaster. Could the letters be leveraged in some legal capacity to break the purchase agreement? Their lawyer advised caution. Without a clear, demonstrable threat beyond the menacing tone, there wasn't a strong legal argument for nullifying the sale. They were stuck. Amid the turmoil, fragments of local lore began to surface. Older residents remembered hearing that decades ago, a previous owner of 657 Boulevard had died unexpectedly. Some said it was a sudden illness. Others whispered about a tragic accident on the property. None of this was confirmed, but rumor gave birth to rumor. A few claimed the house was haunted by old ghosts. Others shrugged off that idea, focusing instead on the letter's mention of a long line of watchers. One anecdote stood out. A local historian recalled that in the 1920s, an extended family, wealthy but reclusive, lived at 657 Boulevard. They hosted lavish parties for Westfield's elite, then abruptly sold the place and vanished from public record. Was it possible this earlier clan had spawned someone who later believed themselves the rightful guardian? But no direct connection to a watcher emerged. Just speculation that something about 657 Boulevard had once drawn peculiar attention. These half-stories only fueled the Bradfords' unease. What if the watcher's talk of generational stewardship was rooted in truth? What if someone did really think they were continuing a family tradition, twisted though it might be? Late at night, Mark imagined a line of watchers across decades. A father teaching his child how to stand in the shadows and peep through windows. The idea was absurd and terrifying. Eventually, the Bradfords decided they'd had enough. They contacted a real estate agent to discuss options for selling. But the real estate agent was candid. The media had caught wind of the letters, and the property story was infamous now. Prospective buyers wouldn't just shrug off the idea of a stalker. Word had already spread across news outlets and social media. People were frightened, and in some cases, morbidly fascinated. But the fascination doesn't translate to writing a check for a potentially dangerous situation. Still, the Bradfords listed the house, They tried to keep the price in line with Westfield's market, hoping to recoup their costs. Few came to look. Those who did were inquisitive about the watcher. Unnerved by the rumor that a stranger might be monitoring every move, the house lingered on the market with no serious offers. Around this time, talk of a potential lawsuit surfaced. The Bradfords considered suing the previous owners, claiming they failed to disclose the harassing letters that they too might have received. The prior owners insisted they'd never received any such letters until the sale was almost complete, and thus didn't believe it to be an ongoing issue. Legal arguments volleyed back and forth, each side contending with the complexities of known or unknown issues regarding a property. Lawsuits and countersuits emerged, drawing more unwanted attention from the press. Meanwhile, the letters persisted sporadically, as though the watcher were toying with them. Sometimes months would pass without a single note. Then a new letter would show up, rife with references to the legal battles or the family's attempts to sell. It was as if the watcher followed not just their physical comings and goings, but also the swirl of legal and financial news around the property. Whoever this was, they stayed informed. Westfield's image as a serene, storybook suburb began to crack. Publications painted the town as home to a bizarre, unsolved stalking case. Local business owners griped that journalists were scaring away potential visitors. Neighbors felt harassed by the press's constant questions. Who do you think's behind these letters? Have you seen any suspicious behavior? Behind closed doors, tension simmered. Some neighbors resented the Bradfords for bringing negative attention. Others pitied them for being caught in a nightmare. Small-town alliances shifted. Gatherings where neighbors might once have exchanged friendly banter now bristled with an undercurrent of suspicion. Once in a while, the conversations would turn to practicalities. If the watcher was truly local, how did they remain invisible? Why did none of the security cameras capture a clear image? Perhaps they delivered the letters at night when no one was around, or simply dropped them in a public mailbox miles away. The watcher seemed cunning, always a step ahead. Speculative theories abounded. Some neighbors theorized the watcher was an older person who rarely left their home, watching through binoculars all day. Others guessed it might be a bored teenager indulging in a sadistic prank. Another camp believed it might be the work of an emotionally disturbed person who once lived in the house, but no single theory answered all the questions. After a while, the Bradfords felt caught in an endless loop. They tried to keep their heads above water, financially and emotionally. Eventually, they made a painful decision to not move into 657 Boulevard at all. They still owned it, paid for the utilities, kept the lawn mowed, and maintained insurance, but it stayed largely vacant, a beautiful shell haunted by an intangible menace. Neighbors would see Mark or Evelyn stop by occasionally, perhaps to pick up mail or let a contractor in for minor repairs. The lights would turn on for a few hours and then go dark again. It was as though the house had become a monument to thwarted hopes, standing silent at the end of a leafy street. People drove by out of curiosity. Some slowed down, rolled down their windows, and peered at the porch, half expecting to see a hooded figure staring back. Others walked the sidewalk at dusk, feeling a shiver when they passed under the glow of the street lamps near 657. "That's the Watcher House," they whispered, as if speaking too loudly might invite a letter of their own. Not all mysteries last indefinitely, but the letters from the Watcher have remained an open question for years. The family would sometimes go weeks, even months, without receiving one. Then, out of the blue, a new envelope would appear. The language might change slightly, reflecting new events or referencing a rumor or lawsuit. But the theme never wavered. The Watcher considered 657 Boulevard to be theirs in some ineffable sense. Like a horror story set in the 21st century, it reminded everyone that not all hauntings need the supernatural. Sometimes, human obsession can be more terrifying than any specter. Stories spread of people who visited the property late at night on a dare. Teens spurred by social media, perhaps. A few snap photos, posted them online, fueling rumors. "We saw a face in the upstairs window," or "we felt someone was watching us from the trees." None of it was confirmed, but the anecdotal accounts piled up, giving the house an urban legend status. It became the kind of place you point out to out-of-town friends when you give them the haunted tour. But behind the spectacle, a real family remained tied to the property. They carried the weight of a mortgage, taxes, and the knowledge that their dream had twisted into a cautionary tale. If there's a lesson to be learned from the Watcher letters, it might be this. Even the most idyllic environments can harbor darkness. Suburban towns often project an image of safety and neighborly warmth. But behind closed doors, behind polite smiles and clipped hedges, who can truly say what's lurking in another person's mind? The identity of the Watcher remains hidden. The local authorities' file is still open, but has become dormant. No arrests have ever been made. From time to time, a new theory surfaces. A genetic test here, a suspicious statement there. Yet none have provided the definitive answer. Some neighbors quietly wonder if the Watcher has passed away or moved on, possibly too unwell or too elderly to continue their twisted campaign. Others fear that the Watcher merely lies in wait, biding their time until someone else tries to make a permanent home of 657 Boulevard. At this point, the house stands as a symbol of unresolved tension. If you were to drive by during the day, you might see a stately facade with tidy landscaping. You might think nothing of it, just another pretty property in a well-heeled neighborhood. But come dusk, when the shadows lengthen and the quiet intensifies, you might sense a different energy there, as though the house itself is aware of its story, bearing silent witness to the watchers and the watched. Why does a story like this continue to grip us? Perhaps it's the notion that we can't fully banish the specter of the unknown. The Watcher's letters slice through suburban order, reminding us that unpredictability and obsession can thrive anywhere. Next door, across the street, or even inside our own minds. Home is supposed to be our safest space, yet 657 Boulevard proves that safety can unravel under the gaze of an unseen threat. Sometimes a locked door and drawn curtains offer little comfort when a stranger claims your home is their ancestral calling. And it resonates on a deeper level too. How fragile is our sense of belonging when one malicious presence can uproot it so thoroughly? In the swirl of theories, lawsuits, heartbreak, and half-answers, a single truth emerges. 657 Boulevard isn't just a house. It's become a symbol, a testament to how a single person can manipulate fear, sow suspicion, and erode the peace of an entire community. The Watcher wrote letters, simple pieces of paper with words typed out. Yet those letters carried a force that broke illusions and shattered trust. And so we arrive, dear listeners, at the end of tonight's exploration into the saga of 657 Boulevard. We've navigated the anxious beginnings, the ever-growing dread, the speculative fervor of a community, and the heartbreaking realization that sometimes we can't shake off the watchers who claim stake in our lives. The house continues to stand, and the watcher's identity remains unknown, an open question that might never be conclusively answered. Before we part ways, consider one final image. It's late, and the street is quiet. The moon hangs over Westfield's stately homes, illuminating shingles and shutters in silver light. A gentle breeze rustles the leaves of an ancient oak tree. Down the block, 657 Boulevard stands beneath a glow cast by a single porch light. If you were to walk by, you'd see the stillness of the house, the carefully maintained facade. But inside, who's to say what lingers? Possibly no one, or possibly the echo of footsteps. In a top floor window, a curtain might shift. You tell yourself, it's just the wind. Or perhaps you feel a slight prickle on the back of your neck, the sense of an unseen gaze following your every move. That is the weight of the Watcher's legacy, an unsettling hush that clings to a property, a silence that raises questions you can't quite articulate. Will the Watcher ever emerge from the darkness to answer them? Or will 657 Boulevard remain forever caught in the grip of a faceless presence, an eternal question mark in the heart of suburban calm? Thank you for joining me tonight on Midnight Signals. I'm Russ Chamberlain, and this has been our journey into a very real and very baffling modern mystery. As you turn off the lights tonight, consider the Watchers in your own life. Are they merely neighbors and friends? Could there be someone lurking at the edges of your routine, their eyes quietly tracing your every movement? We prefer not to think about it, but every so often, a story comes along to remind us that the unknown might be closer than we'd like. Take care, dear listeners, and stay safe. Keep your doors locked, and if you ever receive a letter that sends a cold shiver up your spine, remember the family at 657 Boulevard. You never know when a quiet suburban street might harbor a secret or two. Until next time, may your nights be peaceful and your watchers, if any, be nothing more than a faint shadow of your imagination.